You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
As always on a Wednesday, it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at F&B Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And Wayne, I saw a tweet this morning talking about phase two load shedding. I thought that was all over. Is it a reality?
No. The reality is sitting here with no electricity at the moment. And it is phase two. And look, you never know how long it's going to last, but the stories are now that it'll last for a week because the one nuclear reactor at Coburg's gone down.
Oh.
And they've had some other unplanned outage. And it's going to take them a while to fix. Now, it's interesting load shedding. First of all, Minister Gordhan said we'll be okay until September, October.
Yes.
And how true is that story turning out to be? But yes. Secondly, I've chatted to a lot of people, platinum mining people, coal mining people, engineering people, manufacturing people. And all of them consistently say, Schedule 1 is a walk in the park. They're so used to it. They've changed their business practice. Said if they get Schedule 1 load shedding, you won't even see it in their accounts. They won't even feel the impact of it of their businesses
right.
because they've adapted the way they work and how they work to get around Schedule 1.
Right.
Schedule 2 will be a bit of a problem, but they'll still cope. But 3 or 4, they just shut down. Now, you almost wonder, Eskom should almost have us, you know, while we're still squeezed with electricity, Eskom should almost have us on permanent Schedule 1, because then that gives them a margin so that if something does go wrong somewhere, you don't go from 0 to 2 or 0 to 4. So you almost build up, you know, you leave all the water in the dams. You build up capacity to cope with something breaking down. You almost feel as though, just have us on Schedule 1 permanently because everyone can cope with that. 2 hours every second day or even 2 hours a day, anyone can cope with that. So you almost feel as though they should be proactive and say, even if we have got capacity, we are going to be on permanent Schedule 1 because then we can fill up all the storage dams. Because another interesting thing, I went to a presentation on Eskom. The storage dams, they've got massive capacity to generate electricity. You know, as long as the top dam is full,
yes,
you can actually generate a lot of electricity and you can cope with a lot of unplanned outages. And also the diesel turbines, the open-ended and the closed-end diesel turbines, I mean, these are massive generating capacity and you almost want to leave them in reserve. So I think Eskom should maybe rethink. Even if they've got capacity, they should just put us all on Schedule 1 permanently until this crisis is over so that when something breaks down, they've got capacity somewhere. So you don't have to go to 2 or 3 or 4. You just stay on 1.
Yeah, but when are you going to do it? I mean, you say that everyone can cope. I mean, you're talking about very sophisticated industrial and mining facilities here.
And they're
used to it. But what about somebody that's on a respirator or somebody like me that works from home and suddenly the electricity goes off?
Well, they've had to do it before.
Yeah.
They've had to do it before because it's happened. It's not as though it hasn't happened. So somehow they've coped.
Mm.
And they can cope for one. So I'm talking more about the economic impact of Schedule 1. But I honestly think Eskom should just rethink that because to go from 0 to 2 or from 0 to 4, I mean, that causes chaos.
Yes.
So, you know, as anything in life, even if it's bad news, if you know about it and you know when it's going to happen,
you
can make a plan.
Yeah.
So I'd rather they just give us permanent bad news, Schedule 1, then they can keep the dams full and they don't have to turn on the turbines. And they can do all of these things to keep something in reserve. Because at the moment, there's zero reserve. So when one thing goes wrong, you go to stage two. And like as we saw earlier in the year, if 3 things go wrong, you go to stage 4.
Right.
And stage 4, I chatted to a Northern Platinum management that came to see us a week or two ago. And they said stage 4, you cannot, even if there's the vaguest threat of stage 4, they cannot send 2,000 guys down the shaft in a shift because the electricity might go out and they can't get them back up, so they just close operations.
Mm.
So it's just the threat of stage 4 they'll close, let alone stage four actually happening.
But this is just a Kuberg thing, right? This is not to wet coal. This is not shortage of coal, but it's just a Kuberg once off, maybe for 5 or 6 days. Yeah.
You know, the boilers are leaking or whatever the case is, but it could happen anyway.
Yeah.
Now, it's not a shortage of coal, at least. Now, and the coal, it hasn't rained yet, so the coal isn't wet.
That's one thing. Anyway, but before we get onto the market, let's just talk about the positives of your phase two load shedding. You haven't got any electricity, so you're having a braai, right?
Yeah, I'm having a braai phase. Why not? At least the coal still works. The coal and matches still work. And you know, like every South African, I mean, I haven't bought a generator or anything like that, but I've got some standby emergency lights. So we haven't got electricity from 4 o'clock till 8:30 today.
Please, 4.5 hours. So what? So walk in the park. Mediclinic came out with some update this morning. What do you make of Mediclinic? I've had this conversation with two people today, Wayne. Is this one of the cases where the worst is over now? They were terribly gung-ho when it came to their international expansion, and now they're consolidating, and the share price may be consolidating, and they've recognized their mistakes, so it's time to accumulate. What do you think?
Look, I'm still a little bit cautious, and it's not related to Mediclinic itself. So let's just deal with the trading update.
Yes.
Trading update was positive in comparison to the news that we've had. But it doesn't mean it's a good trading update. It's just better than what we've had from them in the recent past. So they've said Switzerland, they're in such trouble there because of change in government regulations that they're now adapting the business to the government's regulations, i.e. more outpatient work, less charges going through the system, cutting costs, and very similar in Abu Dhabi. And also understand they've opened up two new operations, one in Abu Dhabi and one in Dubai, I think. But there's two quite big new operations which contributed a lot to their growth in turnover and growth in EBITDA. So, yes, it was a more positive update. But why I would be cautious, this is a global trend that we're in the middle of, and it hasn't come to an end yet, and that is governments regulating the hell out of healthcare and regulating the profits out of healthcare. So if you take our NHI, when it happens, how it happens, nobody knows yet. It's just all completely in the air, but it's part of a global trend of governments regulating and keeping an eagle eye on the whole medical industry to try and curtail the costs. So I think this is a structural thing. These companies, I don't think, are ever going to make serious cash again.
Really, Wayne? So you'd stay away from these things?
So I'm very cautious. I wouldn't buy the shares now. I don't think this is a turnaround. I could be wrong, obviously, but I think that this is a global trend. You cannot fight. It's actually very difficult industries, and the drug makers are in the same boat. And in fact, individual doctors are probably in the same boat as well. You know, if NHI is instituted in the current format, which it won't be, of course, I mean, there will be private sector participation in it. It won't all be contracted to the government, but they're going to squeeze how much you can earn as a doctor. They're going to squeeze how much the hospitals can charge and what they can charge for. And when you look at all the medical aid schemes, they're keeping an eagle eye on the whole process. We just had that report by the Competition Commissioner saying basically the industry needs to be completely and utterly reformed. And this started, what, probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and it's unrelenting, and it's not – the end is not in sight for the hospital groups and the providers of healthcare. So I would be cautious.
I think, having a look at some of the eye-watering prices that I've been quoted, I was going to have a heart procedure. And the chap said to me, well, you do this, this, and this, and it'll be 147,000 rand. I thought, wait a second. Your margins are outrageous. This was 3 or 4 years ago. I think, I'm not saying it's a racket, and I'm not saying we've been ripped off, but I certainly think they've been slightly glamorous with their margins.
Look, at the end of the day, all consumers, you, me, everyone, all consumers are unhappy with what they're paying for medical cover.
Mm.
Whether via the medical aid or whether directly via going to the, you know, going directly. Every single person you speak to is unhappy about it. And governments know this, and it's a very big political thing. It's So they're going to continue legislating because it shows they're working for the people. Mm. And as I say, you know, as you so correctly said, you know, you go somewhere, take my, I wear glasses, okay? So I go and get a new pair. I stood on my glasses the other day, and I go and get a new pair. And the new pair, you know, and I'm not a fancy guy. I've got nothing. I don't own a single brand name of anything. No clothes, no jewelry. No,
wait a second. I have to pull you up on that one. How many Jaguar motor cars do you have?
Oh, no, I own motor cars, yeah.
Well, that's a brand
name. They're all old ones that need repairing and restoration. I mean, I've just bought myself another car. It was a Jaguar.
Yes.
But I bought a six-year-old Jaguar, and what's interesting about buying the six-year-old Jaguar, I bought it at 45,000 kilometers, more or less.
Yeah.
I paid a quarter of the price of a new one. So to me, you've got a hole in your head to go and buy a new car because you're just, quite frankly, not getting value for money. So my whole life, I've only bought secondhand motor cars. But to come back, I got to get new glasses, and I get an ordinary frame, just a frame. It's not a... whatever Issey Miyake frame, or there's no brand name to it.
Yes.
But this was 3,500 for a little piece of wire, essentially, and a bit of plastic. And then they ask you, do you want the fancy glare coating and the anti-scratch coating and this coating and the anti-glare coating? And all of these coatings add up to about the price of the glasses. I said, no, just leave all the coatings off. I've never seen them add any value whatsoever to the system. So somewhere people feel, rightly or wrongly, that they're being overcharged.
People are. There's a place, when I used to have a job and earn some money, and I lived in Cape Town, and I had an office close to the Waterkant area of the mother city, I went to a glasses place, an optometrist, very, very fancy place. They quoted me, this was maybe 5-6 years ago, 17,000 rand for the lenses and the frames and everything.
That's crazy.
And the consultation. I mean, I thought, wait a second. This is outrageous. You can go to Clicks, you can get a pair for 150, and it's...
Only reading glasses, eh? It's not prescription glasses.
That's all I want.
Okay, I need glasses for long distance. I mean, my total glass bill was 5,500, which I still think is incredibly expensive for what you're actually getting. And then you go to the dentist. So now I'm going to the dentist next week now, and that's a new dentist because the other one moved away. So I phone up the dentist reception and I say, look, book me an appointment. Book me an hour an appointment because I've got two fillings that have fallen out and it'll take an hour to fix it. So they say, no, the first appointment is to go there and get x-rays and get your teeth cleaned. So they don't want my teeth cleaned. I want these fillings done. Okay, we can do it in that appointment now. And then another thing is, I mean, I was doing some welding and I got a piece of steel stuck in my eyeball. So I went off to the doctor to get the steel taken out. And the first thing they do is they give you an extensive eye check that takes 35 minutes where they puff little bits of air in your eyeball and check the reaction of your eyeball, and they do all of this. And you just think, and then when you see the doctor, it takes him 5 minutes to take the piece of steel out. You just wonder, what was the other 40 minutes for? And then, I mean, you were charged for it, eh?
You really sound like a couple of grumpy old men, Wayne. I've only got four.
Yeah, but we are grumpy old men, and that's okay.
Thank you very much. Another thing to get grumpy about.
I retired last week. I'm still working for F&B. They pulled me back on contract.
Yes.
But I've worked out why you only retire once. Because if you had to retire twice, it would kill you all the administration of retiring. I had to fill out 1,000 forms to retire.
But why? You're just leaving your empty your desk and off you go.
No, I'm still staying there, which is even worse. They've got me on a contract for another year, which I'm very happy about because I still want to work. But it shows you the way, I suppose, the way logic of big organizations work. I'm retiring, so I'm leaving. So they've got a section that deals with people leaving.
Yes.
It's called offboarding, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Offboarding. But then I'm coming back as a contractor, so they've got another section that deals with onboarding. So I had to deal with these two separate sections, offboarding and onboarding. I'm still the same person doing the same job. I've just changed the nature of my contract. Anyway,
layers and layers of people in the financial services industry, and that's why the fees are so high. And that's why people have what I call LBKs, look busy kits. I speak to people every single day, and I'm not being disparaging about financial services per se, but when I speak to people, I'm not allowed to say this, I'm not allowed to say that, I have to do this. And afterwards they say, Lindsay, can you edit this out because you said that? And I think to myself, well, there's five people I've spoken to now. Each of those individuals have to get paid, and that's why the fees are so high. Actually, we're maybe onto something there. Maybe we should have a show called GOM, Grumpy Old Men. A podcast.
Well, there's been quite a few films about grumpy old men, so yeah. And I've got lots of things to be grumpy about.
Okay, well, we'll explore this later on. Wayne, I've only got 4 minutes left now because of you being grumpy.
Let's talk about the markets. Yeah.
Invicta, a quick one on Invicta, initial trading statement for the 6 months ended 30th of September. Used to be a darling.
It used to be a darling, yeah. But, I mean, look at the industry they operate in. Because they are Invicta and Udeka are manufacturing South Africa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they're a proxy for industrial production and PMI and all those sort of things.
Yeah.
Okay. Metropolitan, Momentum Metropolitan Holdings. You know about this company. Summarized financial results and notice of annual general meeting. Sorry, that's the distribution.
That was
a couple of weeks ago. Sorry. Royal Baffa King. Platinums. Platinum and gold. I don't know. Gold's gone a little bit tepid recently. But Royal Baffa King Platinum, there's been some interest in that recently. I've noticed on ShareNet every day.
Yeah. Look, the platinum shares in total have gone from let's call it, for want of a better word, bankruptcy 4 years ago to thriving businesses with flush with cash, and just life couldn't get any better. So it tells you two things. Number one, shows you how variable a commodity company can be. It can go from dire straits to riches in a very, very short space of time. So they're all making money now on the back of the palladium and the rhodium price being higher. But unfortunately, with mining companies, that can change next year again. But on platinum in particular, I'm actually very positive, let's say, on a five-year-plus basis, because the world needs platinum. There's no substitute yet. I mean, that could happen, but there's no substitute yet. Electric vehicles is negative for platinum. Hybrids are not negative. In fact, hybrids are positive for platinum. And I think hybrids, in any sort of energy-efficient future, hybrid will be a major part, because electric vehicles have got very clear shortcomings. But maybe, and when you listen to the platinum guys, they're all punting this, maybe fuel cells will actually be the answer into the future and not electric vehicles.
Well, I've been hearing about that for many, many years. I used to work with a chap when I was in the financial services industry, and he kept on going on and on and on about fuel cells and the platinum demand, but it's never happened. But is it going to be resuscitated? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. The only problem with fuel cells is you've got to find a way to store hydrogen efficiently and safely. You can do that. Fuel cells are a win. But yet, you know, the funny thing is, when you talk to the automobile people, they say if you can store hydrogen safely and efficiently, there'll be no need for anything, because they'll just have hydrogen combustion engines. They'll just have engines that burn hydrogen, and the only emission you get is water. You know, so it's this whole thing's still in flux. But as things stand now, the longer-term outlook for platinum actually looks very platinum, and you know, the old PGMs actually looks quite positive. But in a very shorter term, I'm saying 2 years, 3 years maybe, this big price difference between palladium and platinum is there are armies of people looking at how quickly and how and what the technology is to rather use platinum in petrol engines than palladium in petrol engine exhausts.
Yeah,
because that price differential is massive, and these guys
it's the biggest it's ever been. Yeah, and there has to be some substitution. What you're saying is there is the potential for substitution.
Yeah, you can substitute in the actual exhaust box easily. That's well known technology. The more efficient ones are ones that are bolted onto the engine,
right.
And they're platinum breaks down at high temperature, whereas palladium doesn't. And that's the only technology. And it can be solved and will be solved. That's the only technology that's really holding back a switch from palladium into platinum for petrol engines.
Wayne, I wanted to talk about the US markets because I'm starting to get bullish, which means the market is about to fall on its head. But I've got another I've got another interview, but we'll get grumpy again in the next couple of days. Maybe we'll get David Shapiro and we'll have a three-way conversation. Yeah, let's do that.
Because he's the ultimate grumpy old man. I think he's back from New York this week sometime.
Yeah, I think he's just flown back. But at his age, you know, it takes him about a week to recover from the aeroplane flight.
About a week to get off the aeroplane.
Exactly. With assistance. He's one of those people right at the end you still see sitting there because he's got to be helped off. Hello, David, if you're listening. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNV Wealth and Investment, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.